October 31st, 2016. Topic tonight is going to be, we're going to discuss questions like of the age of the universe. We're going to discuss also what exactly is the difference between man and the animal kingdom, and maybe we'll try to get to another understanding possibly of what people view, how they view the Nachash.
I think you're going to have enough material to fill an hour.
It's a little bit, the Marmokomas are a little bit, right, we have to squeeze 14 billion years into 45 minutes, so we'll see what we can, do. So the question that we've all, how do you drive those, that 14 billion years and 5,777 years? So, source one, you're going to see there's a Mishnah in Chagiga, which says, Ein Dorshin Barayis B'Shlosha, that if you're discussing matters of Arayis, so you shouldn't have more than, you shouldn't have three Talmidim there, you should have less than that, because the Rebbe might get involved in a conversation with one, the other two will then get into a discussion amongst themselves, miss what the Rebbe is saying, and in certain areas such as that, they want to have a very perfect Masora. Veloba Maisa Braces B'Shnayim, and ideas again of that we're going to be discussing maybe in Maisa Braces shouldn't be said in more than two, and the Maisa Merkava, even though it's only been one, and even that one has to be already on a very, very high level. So how can we sit here tonight with X amount of people here, more than two, and discuss my sabratius, because I'm not going to be, as someone said, be divulging any deep mystical secrets, because I don't know any, deep mystical secrets, but that the phrase from the Mishnah already points to that there's pshat, and there's many, many levels, in all, parshiot of the Torah, but especially in the Perek Aleph, Perek Bet of Bereshit, there are so many, truer, deeper levels than just the pshat at face value. Okay, so in terms of, I'm sure sources two and three are Gemaras that, one's a Medrash and then a Gemara that, people have all heard that sometime in the past. But so Bereshit Rabbah mentions Amar Rav Avo, the underlying part, Mikantra Kodesh Baruch Hu Hayabara Alamos Umachriven, Baray Alamos Umachriven. Hashem was involved in creating worlds and destroying worlds. So again, maybe we can already use source 2 as a basis for the world being older than 5,777 years. Source 3, Gemara in Sanhedrin, says Amarav Katina.
Yeah. Can you just finish the thought? Because it's not so obvious. But this world started again. Time started zero.
Right, or that things that we see, they're going to say, in this world, right, could have been from previous worlds. So therefore...
But it was destroyed.
Destroyed, again, could be... First of all, there is... The Arizal takes this Gemara and says... It's not a physical thing. Hashem was all. This was on a spiritual level. Hashem was borei olamos on a spiritual level and destroying them. But other people take it a little bit more. We'll see. Take it more in a physical way. Machriven doesn't mean necessarily that the whole world is destroyed. They wanted to say that that life, was destroyed. I don't know if you wanted to say destroyed, limited. I don't know. Are they say cataclysmic events such as the end of the dinosaurs with I don't know how literally you have to take that with meteors. Do you have to take it as an ice age and things get or could it just be forces in the world that sometimes the world expands in a very and flourishes, and sometimes the world has a little goes into a little bit of retreat, and that might be a maybe that's episodic evolution. I don't know, maybe that's something going on there. Again, how literal you take it, but there's something already in that that you'll see that there will be Rishonim that will follow that will focus on that that this is not the first world, that there are worlds past it, and therefore things that we see in the world that are old somehow a remnant of maybe some previous worlds.
That they were additions of man prior to heaven.
We are going to get to, you know, towards the end, but we'll have to see. Again, if the question I was starting with is you know, 14 billion against 5,700, but we say man is, you know, we count the world from the beginning of man, right? So man is 6,000 years old, almost. But what happens when we see, look in the sign, we see man being older than 10,000 years old? You know, Homo sapiens came out into Europe, I was looking up to saying just about 50,000 years ago. The Neanderthals were already, by then, almost fading out. So they've been around for 150,000 years, and they probably overlapped for maybe 20,000 years, and the end of the Neanderthals were about 30,000 years. But then you have, you know, and then we have these Homo sapiens. But so what happened exactly, you know, how do you treat the Homo sapiens and Adam HaRishon? If we say the first man was Adam HaRishon, what were these, why do we have scientific evidence for people walking the world older than 6,000 years ago? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, source 3, says, Amar Rav Katina, Sheish Alfei Shonei Havi Alma V'chad Charev. The world will last for 6,000 years, and then a 1,000 years of destruction. And they quote a brisa to support the statement of Rav Katina. So if you would have quoted, if you would have looked for a source that was comparing 6,000 and then one and then one, six against one, many of us would have gone to Maaseh Bereishis, 6 days of creation, Hashem resting on the seventh. But if you look at the Gemara didn't take as an example Maaseh Bereishis. They jumped to Shvius. They jumped to Shemitah. And Satanic of Isaiah Rav Katina, Kashem Shah Shvius, Meshametet Shana Achas of Shabbashanim. Just like Shemitah is a rest, you know, for 1 year after working the land for, you know, for 6 years. Kach Olam Meshamet Elef Shanim, Lushivus Alfim Shana. So there, so too the world will rest for 1,000 years after being in existence for 6,000 years. So the but by pointing to Shavuos and not to the creation of the world, well, we know that Shemitah is part of a larger cycle of Yovel. So while the world is just 6 and 1, 6 and 1, 6 and 1, Shabbos going straight, well, you get one Shemitah, but then you get the second time, then you get a second, and then once you get, you know, some Shemitos after 49 years, then you have a Yovel. So it's part of a, again, a larger system, already been hinting that maybe this is, these thousands of years are going to be even, we can even extend that into a longer period of time. And then I just highlighted, because we're going to get back to this, we're going to offer three different, I'm sorry, let me just overview, three different maybe views about this age of the universe. One is, I'm going to quote it in the name of, let's say, well, sources, but I'm going to end up with an idea by Rav Kaplan, Aryeh Kaplan. Then I'm going to mention an idea by Schroeder, Gerald Schroeder, and then we'll mention an idea by Nathan Slifkin. So those are three. And then the second half we'll go into, again, other ideas of Adam and the Nachash and Homo sapiens. So here we're building into a number reached by Aryeh Kaplan. So Rav Kaplan. So another pasuk in that Gemara says, "Va'omer ki elef shim beinecha ki yom et mol ki yavor." They say a thousand years, you know, of human years is like 1 year in is like.
One day.
Okay, one day. That's going to throw off the calculations a little bit. I thought it was that. No, it's not. It's like 1 day. So 1 day is like 1,000. 1,000 years of us is like 1 day in Hashem. That's the calculation. Okay, that works. So then, again, if you go to source 4, when we had just this, so already, again, the Gemara mentioned something about Shemitah, so I quote the Pasuk in Shemitah, and it seems like a very straightforward Pasuk, not revealing any secrets. Dabir al-Bnei Yisrael v'amarta lehem, ki saval ha'aretz, when you come to the land, Hashem notein lechem, that I give you, v'shavta ha'aretz shabbat l'Hashem. The land will rest as a shabbat l'Hashem. So already the Ibn Ezra quotes, and I underline, v'sod yimei olam ramoz b'makom hazeh. Already in this pasuk of Shemitah, there is a sod, a secret of Yemei Olam, the count of the world, the days of the world, the age of the universe is hinted to it in this place. The Ramban also says, "Vesod Godo Musodos HaTorah, Vesod Yemos Olam Ramuz Mamakam Azeh." There's a deep secret here. V'chof Aznecha, and cup your ears. and listen. Lishmoa, mashani rishai lashmiacha mimenu b'loshon asher ashmiacha ve'im tiskeh titbonen. So I'll listen carefully. I'll try to say something. Maybe you'll as much as I can. I'm allowed to say and see if you can understand. V'nei ha'yomin rama remez lashebara b'maisa bereishis. So we have, I think it goes back to Maisa Bereishis, so the one and the six and the one, so that's going to be 6,000 years and then 1,000 years rest. However, the Shonim, the years that are years of Yovel, since that's years of Shemitah, but in a cycle of Yovel, Yirmazu Lashe Yebibriyat Kol Yimei Olam. But Yovel is already pointing to what will happen for the whole Kol Yimei Olam, all the age of the world, and therefore, and he quotes V'shem Lezer Ramos Rabbeinu, and the Rabban says maybe this is what the Chazal were hinting at when they said Chamishin Shari Bina Nivru Ba'Olam. There are 50 gates of wisdom in the world. V'chulam Nivru LaMoshe. Moshe was afforded or had access to all of them. Chutz Mechad, except. No, he had access to 49 gates, and we want to say that maybe every gate is a is corresponding to maybe to a year in the Yovel. So look at then the source 7 is a an article by Rafael Shuchat. I thought it was a very nice article. He's a affiliated with Bar Ilan. He's an expert in Lithuanian Kabbalah, especially in the Beis Medrash of the Gra, and. So he wrote this article entitled Attitudes Towards Cosmology and Evolution Among Rabbinic Thinkers in the 19th and Early 20th Centuries, The Resurgence of the Doctrine of the Sabbatical Years. So he says, according to the Ramban, each world is destined, like our own, to exist for 7,000 years, 7 millennia. There are ultimately 7 worlds, paralleling the years of the Yovel. In addition, each world with its 7 millennia parallels the Kabbalistic idea of the 7 lower Sefirot, from Chesed to Malchus, which represent the natural world. So there's this, where these worlds, it's not going to, so the Jubilee year in the Kabbalistic terms parallels the sphere of Bina called the 50th gate, which is the beginning of the hidden Sefirot and represents the idea of redemption. So this is what Ramban means when he says, and possibly this is what so therefore there are 49,000 years which comprise these 7 worlds and then followed by Yovel. So we've gotten up to 6 days. Maybe I've worked out to 7,000 years. Now I'm up to 49,000 years within the sources. How do we get to billions of years? So now the next source, source 8, is a Talmud of the Ramban, Yitzchak of Akko. It says, I, the insignificant Yitzchak of Akko, have seen to fit to write a great mystery that should be kept very well hidden. One of God's days is 1,000 years. We saw that in the Gemara. Okay? And as it says, for 1,000 years on your eyes is a fleeting yesterday. Since one of our years is 365 and a quarter days, a year on high for Hashem is 365,250 years. So let's do the math one more time. If a one day of Hashem, right, is 1,000 years for us, 1,000 years. So 365 days, or 365 days will be 365,000 years of us. So 1 year for one day of 1 year for Hashem, 1 year for Hashem is in our years 365,250 years. So what he is saying now, he goes on to say that when we said that the world is going to last for 49,000 years, it didn't mean human years, 49,000 years. It meant years, God years. Now remember, every one of God's years is 365,250 of our years. So Rav Kaplan then goes on to say that. He quotes the Rav Yitzchak de Menachem, and he says these years are not human years, but years of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then we're going to see which cycle are we in. So he quotes that there's a shita in the Livnas HaSapir, that we're in the last cycle. We're in the sixth Shemitah. So therefore, in the beginning, so in the sixth Shemitah, that's the sixth time. So again, at the first Shemitah, that would be 7,000 of God years. The second one would be 14. After 6, 7 times 6, you get 42,000 of God's years. And we're in that, he wants to say from then on, I guess it's Adam and counting forward. But if you, he wanted to say that if you took the math and he did 42,000, because that's after we're in this, the beginning of, you know, the sixth year, and he quoted it and he multiplied it by 360 by 1,250, which is Hashem's years, and he gets to an answer of 15.3 billion, which was close. Some things to, I heard that he might, you know, so one critique someone pointed out in one of the thing, lectures that I heard was that Rav Yisroel ben Min'ako, in his own writings, held that we're not in the sixth cycle of Shemitah, but we're in the second cycle of Shemitah. So that can put a kink. But if you put it together, that somehow, again, you came to, you know, the world lasting 6,000, 7,000 years. And then we said that was part of a Yovel cycle, so the world is really lasting 49,000 years. And then if we said that these the years, 49,000, are not our years, but they're God's years, and in God's every, and 1,000 years is really one day, so then you did the math, and he came to 15 billion.
Take me to the beginning. What question are you trying to answer? Not about the Homo sapiens, or about...
No, I'm not doing that. I'm going starting off with the age of the universe.
But so therefore, I mean, aren't there a lot more simpler answers?
Everyone says you're going to say, the sun is on day four, time is, you know, we start... Right, so how do you count 24 hours without a sun? Agreed. I mean, I'm just saying how one person, or and not only us, but it's again using some of the you know what there was this Masorah of this world being, you know, created and destroyed, and a world of being 49,000 years old, and these cycles. So he came up with a way where using those sources, then we can come up. But I agree. I mean, you can't counting, again, we're counting 6,000 from Rishon. Everything before that can have a different, day doesn't need a day.
There's
a day can mean billions,
answers.
Billions of, you know, billions of years. Okay, so let me just, you know, and we'll talk. So let's see how, you know, that was one answer. The next, just to show you how this idea of the world of what he wanted to say of this world being 49,000 of past worlds and Hashem recreating worlds, and but just showing how certain of the Rabbanim of the past were not afraid, I guess, of the scientific discoveries, but embraced it and almost wanted to say that it's complete, you know, harmony and synthesis and how beautiful and how great, and didn't run in fear of it and didn't start, as you see, ripping out and censoring, but embraced it. So there is a the Tiferes Yisrael is found in the Yochanan Boaz, a discussion of his called the Drush Or HaChaim, which he gave in 1842, was found at the end of Sanhedrin in those Mishnayos. I just Googled and said Darwin's. This is even before Darwin's Origin of the Species, which I looked up, which is in 1859. So we're a good 17 years even earlier. But listen just how excited he is, and he's not apologetic, and he just embraces science and his tradition. So he says, the Kabbalist quoted by Rabbeinu Bachya amplified the statement and revealed that this process is repeated seven times, each Shemitah achieving greater perfection than the last, until the plan of creation is crowned by the great jubilee after 49,000 year. They also tell us that we are now in the midst of the fourth. So I heard sixth, second, fourth. You know, what of your cycles are you in? We're able to appreciate to the full, the wonderful accuracy of our holy Torah, when we see that this secret doctrine, handed down by word of mouth for so long, and revealed to us by the sages of Kabbalah many centuries ago, has been borne out in the clearest manner by the science of our generation. It says, the restless spirit in man, the desire to discover all mysteries, they were digging, they found fossils. And he writes down in here, you know, a mammoth elephant, a guanodon, which was a herbivore, and a megalosaurus, which was a carnivore. So, and he just says, this is tremendous, because our tradition of Hashem, you know, creating worlds and destroying worlds can explain, and all this destruction can, like, you know, can explain how these animals were here, and how we're finding the remnants of those errors. Rav Hirsch, in Source 11, again, I'm just showing in attitudes how they looked at science or evolution and Torah. And he says it's not a threat to our theology. Even if the latest scientific notion that the genesis of all the multitude of organic forms on Earth can be traced back to a single, most primitive, primeval form of life, were ever to gain complete acceptance by the scientific world, Judaism in that case will call upon adherents to give even greater reverence than ever before to the one sole God, who in his boundless creative wisdom and internal omnipotence needed to bring into existence no more than a single amorphous nucleus and one single law of adaptation and heredity in order to bring forth what seemed chaos but was in fact a very definite order. So he's not afraid to, you know, if there are, you know, the theories that, you know, more complicated things came from simpler things, and we all came even from a single nucleus, that doesn't throw Rav Hirsch. As long as we say that there was a Bore, and he was the one that started, you know, the creation, we, of course, then, he's also involved in the steps of the creation, that's, you know, but even from simpler to more complex, as long as he was the Bore, it does, the way Hashem is using, you know, evolutionary biology to then carry out his will in terms of how he wants the Bria to unfold. Rav Kook, in source 12, also said the theory of evolution, which at present is conquering the world, is in harmony with the eternal secrets of Kabbalah. He was actually looking at, we mentioned that all these sfirot in each world is going higher and higher and more perfection. So he liked that in evolution also things are growing and moving up and not staying stagnant. So that Rav Kook felt was a beautiful idea, an optimistic idea. Everything develops and is elevated constantly, and evolutionary ascent, divine element within it, and he was happy with that. However, there are sources that want to take, sources 13 and 14, want to take those 24 hours in creation a little bit more literally. If you took a Rashi in Chagiga, source 13, midat yom and midat laila, eshim ve'arba ashoras bein shnehem. So he's saying those days in creation are literally 24 hours. And the Ramban also underlined yamim mamish, literally days. So Gerald Schroeder, and this will be the second way that we can look at this this issue, wanted to say that they're both true. You can have 24-hour days, and you can have 14 billion years, and they're both true. What he uses is a concept called, time dilation or space expansion. I have a science book, probably geared for an eighth grader, that I bought and wanted my kids to look at in their free time. Sometimes, I don't know if they did or not, but I did. And so we see that when it gets to the chapter on light, so we already know that Einstein already said that and there was a movie out also. What was that movie where they went out in? Interstellar, where they were in a, they were circling a planet. We had one person on the spaceship that didn't go down to a large planet that had a heavy gravity, and there were two people that went down, maybe stayed there for 2 hours, but when they came back to the spaceship, where the person who was not exposed to that heavy gravity, so they ate, you know, the people that went down to the planet and were exposed to heavy gravity aged 2 hours, this guy on the plane, you know, age 20 years or something like that. So you see that time, that there was heavy gravity can slow down time, and the closer you get to the speed of light, also time slows. Some ideas I'll just try to, you know, just try to throw out was that they said if you have a train going by, left to right over here, and on that train, I guess you see you have a father throwing a baseball to a son, let's say at 50 miles an hour, and let's say the train is going 150 miles an hour. Okay, so when you're on the train, the son who's a catcher sees the ball coming to him at 50 miles an hour. You know, that's yesterday. But if I'm staying at a station and I'm watching this ball go through, you know, by, and I think if the train is going 100, and then the ball's going, the father's throwing at 50, so I'm going to see that ball going, I think, at 150 miles an hour. But then they said, they saw and tried to explain it, and said, let's say you had a rocket ship or something which is a one light year long. Light year is the distance that light can travel in 1 year. So you have that long rocket ship going, and let's say it's going at half the speed of light. So, and then again, you had a father and a son on that rocket ship. The father starts the flashlight, the son receives it, so they're on it, they're a light year away, that's how long it is. It's going to take a year for the son, you know, to see that light, even like that. But if then what happens if I'm on a outside the spaceship and looking in? So I said the light is going at the speed of light, and then I said the spaceship is going, let's say, at half the speed of light. But so I might have thought that this light is going to go at 1.5, you know, like faster. No, they want to say in these utilities that the light also is also going at the speed of light. Not, it doesn't change. So the question was, if we knew that, velocity times time equals distance, and here the distance was one, let's say one light year, that distance, but I'm maybe seeing it as it's moving as 1.5 light years, but if velocity is the same, because that doesn't change, but the distance is longer, that means for me, time had to be a little faster compared to the people on the train. That's just certain things. Let me just say what it said over here. Someone else wanted to say that if a bus is moving at 20 miles and a car is moving at 20 miles an hour and I'm running behind it at 19, so that car is moving away from me at 1 mile per hour. However, if I'm going at 99.999 the speed of light, and then it's on a flashlight, that flashlight is not going just slightly ahead of me. That light always goes away from me at the speed of light. These are just the things that I've read, but the bottom line was, according to Einstein, traveling forward in time is easy, I'm saying. Jump in a rocket, whiz around the universe at 99.99% of the speed of light, or hang around something with a colossal gravity like a black hole, come back in 4 months, everyone you know will be 24 years older. I may just say something, going at 99% of the speed of light. Yeah, listen, it says here, this I read this to Lisa and she came up with a line. You can never reach the speed of light, it's impossible. What do you think of this? If you could reach the speed of light, you'd be. They also want to say, besides time slowing down, you're heavier and you actually shrink. That's what this book is trying to show you, that something is this size and getting this and this. So watch it. It says impossible. You'd be at the speed of light. You'd be zero length, heavier than the universe, and time would stop. So Hashem, Lisa said, that's almost like a definition of Hashem. Zero length, meaning Hashem is doesn't take up space. Heavier than the universe, he encompasses the whole universe, and time would stop. He's above time, which is something that I thought was an interesting comment. But so that was mentioning how Einstein saw time. So I always thought that what it meant, which Schroeder was getting to, was that at the beginning of the universe, there was a lot of mass. The whole mass was concentrated, you know, right in that spot. And also, the universe is expanding very, very fast, you know, speed of light. So therefore, when he wants to say there's two time frames, something where I look back, so for me looking back at the creation, I can look at that as 14 billion years. But someone looking forward and going from Hashem's viewpoint, going forward to where I am, since under great gravity and under great velocity, time slows down. So to me, that might only seem like 6 days. So therefore, how we got 6 days going forward, but 14 billion years going back. Schroeder actually said, didn't only go in with the velocity and the gravity, he wanted to say it's the stretching of space. And he gives an example that space itself is stretching, and he wanted to say every time the universe doubles, time halves. So therefore, he gave some sort of experiment that if you're at the beginning, I don't know if I'm losing anybody, if this is interesting or not, but he pointed a laser at the beginning of time every second. But since time stretches, when you receive it, it doesn't mean that you're going to get it at the light. You get one laser beam, that the second one, even though it started a second later, you're not going to receive it a second later, because since the distance, the time, the space stretched, it might end up being billions of years later till you actually receive that second light. It's underlined there. So he wants to say, when we say the universe is 15 billion years old, there's another half of the sentence that we rarely bother to say. The other half of the sentence is, the universe is 15 billion years old as seen from the time-space coordinates of the Earth. So Einstein already said that in regions of high velocity, high gravity, time actually passes more slowly. And that's. But he also mentions the stretching of space. The key is that the Torah is looking from another time-space coordinate. The Torah looks forward in time from a very different time-space coordinate when the universe was small. And therefore, according to Schroeder, it's possible to say that, yes, these were 6 days, 24-hour days, but when you're looking forward this way, those days, as time's slowing down, could end up, when we look backwards, as being, with this concept of time dilation, could be 14 billion years. Slifkin, not Tan Slifkin, in source...
Is there a concept that the Big Bang Theory only took 3 minutes or something like that?
There is, in terms
of... The same idea, there was an incredible amount of...
Right, I mean... Right.
And
I know within nano, you know, hundreds of thousands of a second, we were already, you know, and then already things were forming, and then the universe is expanding. I don't know, but the universe is still expanding, according, you know.
Aviezer's father came and spoke in the show.
Oh yeah, we're gonna go to Aviezer. Yeah.
Okay, so he quoted a book called The First 3 Minutes.
Okay. Right. Yeah. So we're gonna quote we're gonna quote him. So Nathan Slifkin actually had a third approach that I wanted to discuss. And he says, as much as you want to try to get science and the Torah to drive, you know, if you look in the Chumash, on day 3, we have grass and we have fruit trees. On day 4, we have, that's when we have the sun. There's no way to have, you know, grass growing and trees growing that need photosynthesis without, you know, without the sun. So how are you having grass and trees, no matter what, you know, before, no matter what you do, before you have a sun, if, you know, if the sun wasn't there? So he wanted to say, his point, I think, wanted to say is that that the Torah, again, is not a book of history, but it's a book of theology. And back then, he wanted to, and it was also, even though the Torah gives truths that last for eternity and for all ages, the issue of the, you know, for the at the time that the Torah had to overcome and was so, you want to say, so successful in overcoming, was this idea of paganism, and back then everyone believed in multiple gods, but of course everyone also believed definitely in the sun god. That was one of their number one, you know, number one gods. So he wanted to say that one of the ways that the Torah was teaching theology and trying to say, no, there's one God and there's no separate power, of, you know, called the sun god, was to say in the story of how in the Psukim, we relegate the sun already. It didn't even make it into the top 3. It's only relegated to day 4. Again, that might not be historically, you know, if it, you know, what he's saying in terms of biological evolution and cosmology, and in terms of what the world. Of course, there was a sun before there was trees and, you know, and grass, but theologically, Hashem is putting the sun for to show you that that's how much importance we don't put it at the same amount of importance as the rest of the world would put in terms of, oh, the sun god is the number one God. He also tries to also look at things. He asks questions of like, well, again, why did Hashem have, you know, looking back, why did Hashem have, you know, or create dinosaurs? So you could have said that it just needed to go through that stage in order to get to us and to get everything else. There needed to be that you know, that stage, but also possibly an idea behind it. Again, they were on the world for, you know, over 100 million years, and then they were, according to current theory, I think there was a cataclysmic, you know, event. So just almost like to teach man certain humility, yes, here are these great beasts that rule the world for a very, very long time, and they're gone. So, you know, possibly as a message to us also to be a little bit more humble. So that was the first part, just dealing, I guess I started to say, 3 different ways to deal with, one was this, again, this whole idea hidden in Hashem creating worlds, destroying worlds, and the Shemitah idea, and bringing it up, you know, to 49,000, and then maybe multiplying it for divine years in getting a large number. We had the we saw some of, you know, some of how some more recent Rabbanim were not afraid of the scientific discoveries, but we saw Gerald Schroeder, who tried to take and look at 6 days as really 24-hour days and take 14 billion years, and they match. It just depends on the perspective, looking forward or looking back. And now I wanted to get to the another point, talking about the second point of, if we say Adam HaRishon was the first man, and that was 6,000 years ago, well, what about evidence of men before 6,000 years ago? So let's look at source 17. So it says in Bereishis, Vayivra Perek Aleph, compare that to Perek Bet. This is not the first time we have Adam 1 and Adam 2. The Rav, you know, discussed this. All these things have been pointed out, textual difficulties have been pointed out in the past. But you see, it says Vayitzar, instead of Vayivra, uses a different verb. Then it says, I'm not going to answer all these, you know, all the discrepancies, but it says, the first one says Elohim, here it says Hashem Elohim. And then in the first in Perek Aleph, it seems like well, this might be maybe a difference. Man was created, you know, ex nihilo, not from afar min adama. It was just created. Well, and maybe that's vayivra. We'll see in the Malbim wants to say that's a creation ex nihilo, from nothing. While other terms vayitzer, and well, I'm not. We'll have to look. What's the difference between also vayas? Those would be terms of not of absolute creation, but modifications already from existing forms. So vayitzer Elokim es afar min adama. We see that in the first one we have zachar nekeva. It was already was together, and which is not the case in Perek Bet. And then in Perek Bet, we also have this Hashem blowing into Adam HaRishon Nishmas Chayim, and to be a Nefesh Chaya. So the Malbim on 19, I already pointed out, this was actually talking about animals on the fifth day, and then animals on the sixth day. And it says on the sixth day, it uses the term vayas and not vayivra, because he wants to say asiya shu gemar hadavat v'tikuno. It's already using a term where you already, Hashem on the sixth day, is, we already have, those animals already had maybe movement and had certain properties, but more refined, more updated, more specialized properties, which were then infused on day six, that didn't necessitate the word vayivra, but vayas would be good enough for that advancement. So, if you looked at Pasuk 20, at source 20, so the end of the Pasuk said, B'chol sheikra lo Adam, I'm going now to Adam, naming the animals. Adam, nefesh chaya hu shemo. So the nefesh chaya seems a little bit out of place. Rashi puts the term nefesh chaya to the beginning of the Pasuk, and says, V'chol, and all nefesh chaya, all animals, that then Adam would call by a certain name, that would be its name forever. But the Ramban says no. V'chavan olama ki Adam, and I'm just bringing the Ramban also to support this idea that man is a nishmas chayim, by definition, from Perek Bet, a nishmas chayim. I guess the idea would be that at one stage of creation, Hashem made, and that would be ex nihilo and Perek Aleph, Hashem made man. But at a second stage, Hashem perfected this man by blowing in, or elevated this man by blowing in Nishmas Chaim and making him a Nefesh Chaya. So the Ramban is saying, Vakavana loma ki Adam Nefesh Chaya. Man is, so he reads the pasuk straight through as it's written. Man is a nefesh chaya. Kamosha maviyah adam le nefesh chaya. Ukamosha parashi. Bevi l'panav haminim kulan. Hashem brings all the animals to him. V'chol min, he reads, meham sheikro adam bishmo. If any min that he comes across, he can then call by his name. If he can call that min a nefesh chaya, v'yom aboshu hu nefesh chaya kamoso. This person is a nefesh chaya like me, hu yeshimo, that would be his name. This animal will also be called a nefesh chaya, and then that nefesh chaya would be his ezer kenegdo. And that's how he reads the pasuk straight through. But he went through the whole animal kingdom, and he didn't see any other animal that was had this unique trait that we call that Adam HaRishon had, which was a Nishmas Chayim. So we also know that the Nachash goes right after this. And we've mentioned in a previous year that the what instigated the Nachash, and we brought sources that the Nachash was the head, was the king of all the animal kingdom. And if Adam HaRishon is rejecting every aspect of the animal kingdom to be an Ezek Kenegdo, you do not have this Neshmas Chaim, the Nachash as a representative and the head and the pinnacle of the animal kingdom comes and wants to almost argue and says, no, I can be an Ezek Kenegdo. I can be, you're not so different, Adam. You're not so different from me. And but listen to the Yalkut over here. Yalkut says, just to picture, we instead of picturing a snake, and maybe we all do this, the Nachash says, Ani asitcha shetei melech hakol behema v'chaya. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. You're going to be the melech, the pinnacle of all the animal kingdom. And but now you're going to be arur mikol behema. You, I set you up, mahalech kamiyut ka'adam. You're going to stand straight, and you were standing straight and walking like a man, right? And now, you know, after the sin, you're going to go on your belly. I gave you, you were going to eat like a person. Person, Adam, and now you're going to eat afar, and you, and this is Rashi quotes this too. What was behind some of what the Nachash wanted to do? He wanted to have Chava give the apple, or give the apple, give the from the Eitz Hadas to Adam. Adam would die, and he would then have Chava to himself. So, but now you're thinking a snake with Chava, but we have to change it. If we're not thinking about a snake, but you're thinking about someone who stands straight, who on two legs, who can talk, who can eat, who can speak, who is cunning, you know, all those aspects, then you can understand a little bit different. L'harogat Adam lisa et Chava, and therefore I put Eva between you and man. I want to say, and we're going to maybe possibly that. We'll talk, but maybe, right? The jump from, if we say were more than 6,000 years ago, and through evolution, came to a pinnacle called the Homo sapiens. But something happened 6,000 years ago, where from these Homo sapiens, one Adam was infused, or you know, even higher, and got a neshama, nishmas chayim, and that is a man. But physically, what's the difference between, you know, we're saying there's a tremendous difference between Adam that has a neshama and a Homo sapien, right, that doesn't have a neshama. One is part of the animal kingdom, you know. One is not. Possibly, and I don't want to throw out, maybe the Nachash was a Homo sapien. Was this Homo sapien right before that Adam had, had the neshama, and that's the
Homo sapien.
What?
A Homo. I mean, we know that.
I want to say
Neanderthal man was a different species within,
right,
Homo.
Within Homo, but still,
Homo erectus,
right, correct. But I'm even saying, I don't want to push it. So I want to bring it even very close to Adam. Don't go further back. Don't go back Homo erectus.
Well,
don't go back to Homo, you know, and the Neanderthal. Bring it close to already
it's
within
the
time, right
parts of the world.
Right, but I'm saying that already Neanderthals, you know, died out. They want to say at least, you know, there was no more left after, you know, 30,000 years ago. So then there was Homo sapiens. So, you know, let's even bring it closer. But the distinction, the jump between a Homo sapien without a neshama to a Homo sapien with a neshama is the same jump from anything in the animal kingdom, you know, to what makes us human. But let's just look at some other sources that do we say that at the time Adam was walking around, were there other people that were in human form but didn't have a neshama? Is that a concept that maybe people have heard? So look at some of these sources. So there's a pasuk here that's in source 23. It says, "Vayiru bnei Elokim et benota Adam ki tavot hena vayichu lehem nashim mikol asher bacharu." So again, Rashi probably says it seems to be two categories here: the category of bnei Elokim and the category of Benota Adam. So, you know, Rashi would take it, probably Ben Elokim are human like everyone else, but they were the, you know, the sons of rulers and of
princes,
right, princes and rulers and judges and things that even they, you know, they, but they were the people who should have been enforcing and or they were acting in a Hamas way and you know and and that's where the world was going. But but listen to what Rabbeinu Bechaye says. So earlier in Bracious, we already went through the generations of Kayin. He wants to say that these children, again, it says in the Pasuk that Adam was intimate with Chava and had Kayin. But he wants to say that possibly, I know some people want to say if the Nachash not only wanted to, but actually did. And you don't have to take this literally. You could take it more saying that there were traits of the Nachash, which were brutish traits, which were very base traits, maybe got passed on, you know, or when children start acting that way, that's been like looking back, you know, as being descendants of how the Nachash acted. But if you want to take it also possibly literally, that there was something, you know, and these descendants are viewed as descendants of the Nachash, and those were the descendants of Kayin, and they want to say Chanuch Yirad V'Lemech Umeham. I'm turning the page. They ended their names Kishemot HaMalachim. They ended El at the end of their names Mechuel Umetushuel. And these are the toldot of Kayin. These are these descendants of Kayin. Vayu Bnei Elokim Epenot Adam. He wants to say the Bnei Elokim are not below Bnei Adam HaRishon. These are the descendants from Chava that came from more through the genealogy of the Nachash and not from Adam HaRishon. And therefore, the Chazal, Zesever told us Adam, these are the told us of the Adam, but the Rishonos that were mentioned earlier from Kain, those are not told us Adam. Mahem Elokut. They were Shkula Nodom Mikayin Shonon Michav Mikoch El Mechav Avavavainzeh. So you already start seeing that there are certain Bnei Elokim that are not sort of like the children of Adam, but are somehow, you know, other, you know, humanoid forms going around, but coming from maybe either spiritually or just like, but from the from the Nachash. But look in the Sefer.
Only Bnei Adam were the descendants of Sheikh.
From Sheikh, correct. Now look at the Maran Avuchim. And again, this also can be taken more literally. I saw this quoted in the Sefer Echoes from Eden from Rav Ari Khan, and he took it definitely, you know, more literally. And look at what the Rambam says. Okay, so let's go to the end of the source number 25. The Rambam is commenting on the following pasuk. It says that after 130 years, it says, look at the very last line. The pasuk says that after 130 years, then Adam had a son who was in his tselem. So what is, look up two lines, look at the last word on the third to end line. What does the Medrash say on that? So, Ba'amru B'Medrash, Kol Osun Kuf Lamed Shana, for all vows, 130 years, this I thought was wild, Shahaya Adam Nazuf Behem, when Adam, for those 130 years, after when he got removed from Gan Eden, for 130 years, I think he didn't have any contact with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So he was sort of like in Golos. He had children, Adam, but those children, Hayamolid Ruchos, spirits, Ratzalama Shadim, he was giving birth to Shadim, the major says. But when there was Ritzur between Hashem and him, holy b'nusokitzamal. Finally, he had a son that had was in his tzelem. Let's go back up to the Moran of Uchim. Uvzot Hashem nema ba'adam. V'chi adam shloshim umat shana v'yolad b'nusokitzamal. And we said inyan tzelem adam b'nusok mahu. All the earlier children during these 130 years, they really didn't reach the human form truly. They didn't truly reach the human form. Ashihi tzelem adam muto, really have tzelem elokim, or this nishmas chayim, it could be, you know, sort of interchangeable. Hanemla, right, b'tzelem elokim muto. Umnan sheish, sheish, when he was born, and lamdu ve'vinu, and he understood, and he came to the understanding, v'nitzu sholem, and he was whole, and he had whole in his enoshi, in his human form. Amar bo v'yolud b'nusso k'tzamo. And if any person who is not, all these people who've not come up to this standard that we've explained, listen to this where I highlighted, who ain't no ish, it's not a person, aval behema, it's an animal, al tsurat ish betavnito, it's an animal in human form, if it doesn't have this nefesh chayat tzelem elokim in it. I quoted, so therefore, it's quite possible we already see that there could be, even if Adam was the first, according to Rav Ari Khan, again, he wanted to say, even if Adam was definitely B'Tzelem Elokim Nefesh Chaya, it wasn't necessarily absolute that he would transfer that humanness, that Nefesh, definitely to all his offsprings, until maybe Shais was born. Rav Kook mentioned something in the Zohar, and I underline Chos 26, that there were other types of human in addition to Adam. Rav Kook in 27 wanted to say that there's nothing wrong with saying, over millions of years, reaching a man who realized that he's different from the animals. So the question, so basically what I think I wanted to do just in the last two sources is point out that maybe these people, Abiezer, and now, and I'm going to quote Baruch Sturman, and this is an article in... both one is a Chakira journal and one is in the in an article in Tradition, but they want to then both want to take evolution at its face value in terms of progressing till you have a Homo sapien, but still something had changed. I want to say close to 6,000 years ago to change this Homo sapien, which could be the animal Homo sapien, into the human form of a person. And he wanted to say, and that's, you know, and that's the soul, and that's when we start counting. So Abiezer, who is a is the ex chairman of Professor Abiezer at Bar Ilan in physics, said, let's go. So additionally, there are 6 days from creation. Okay, the creation of the first human starts on day 6. That's the first being with the soul of a human. And what should I say? Not the first hominid, a being with human shape and intelligence, but lacking the soul of humanity, the neshama. So there could have been, again, hominids, there could be Homo sapiens around, but didn't have the neshama. So we want to say, he wanted to say, what happened? We wanted to say that Homo sapiens, again, have been around, possibly in Europe, maybe for 50,000 years. But they were very... He wants to say they were... He doesn't want to say. Wikipedia says they were very hunters and gatherers till 10,000 years ago. There's something called the Neolithic Revolution, which happened 10,000 years ago. And then... So he wants to say, what did they got in the Shama? A spiritual train that took place in the behavior of human beings, leading to the beginning of civilization. So the Torah is only concerned with modern man, Homo sapiens, who spoke to God and gave, the intelligent Homo sapien, who God spoke to and gave a moral code. Right? Okay, there's no reason why one cannot say that Adam was the end product of a developmental process. He has this developmental process. Homo sapiens, 10,000 years ago until then, hunters, gatherers, but then they start being... look in Wikipedia, the end of it, they start from hunting and gathering to agriculture. I start, then all of a sudden, settlements, trading, art, architecture, it's a revolution, political structures. This only happened in the last 10,000 years, okay? Writing, only in the last 10,000 years, property, social class, all this is in Homo sapiens over the last 10,000 years. So, but this is what he wanted to say, the first fully developed manifestation of the entire Neolithic complex, this is a quote from Wikipedia, right, is seen in the Middle Eastern Sumerian cities before present. How many years? 5,500 years before present. This whole idea that man, Homo sapiens, then something changed. There was a revolution that came to, it started only 10,000 years ago, but came to an apex of where they had a city and people, and with all these things of writing and culture and social class and art and everything, only started, according to Wikipedia, 5,500 years ago, very much driving. You want to say that period, something happened in man. Now again, I discuss with Sturman. Do we say that this is basically an evolutionary process, and then man develops, and somehow then comes to the understanding of oh, let me just finish the next one, and we'll talk for one second. We'll end with that. We'll be ending in about 2 minutes. So Baruch Sturman, who's also a physicist at Hebrew U, he was also involved in Petil Techelet, wrote an article in Tradition, and he also wants to say, he said, where to draw the line between man and animal? What is a soul? So Arya Kaplan said that soul is a human being, a spiritual being. So, and Adam was the first spiritual being. But he says we have some art from a little bit more than 6,000, between 6,000 and 10,000 years ago. For those who we have some art and culture and some religion were beginning to form. So he wanted to say, instead of spiritual being, I underlined it and highlighted it. According to Sturman, a man capable of understanding the concept of monotheism. That is what differentiates man from Homo sapiens. So, because you have a tzivut to believe in one God, so you have to have to understand the concept of monotheism. We mentioned I gave a shiur once on Reformin's book, which is an excellent book, "The Beast Crouches at the Door." He wants to say the difference between man and a person is that a beast or animals listen to the voice that's instinctual that Hashem put inside him, and that's how, while we can hear or respond to a voice that was given externally. But either way, I asked, so that is, that's the difference between, according to Judaism, Homo sapiens capable of understanding monotheism is as different from the previous Homo sapiens as he is from a squirrel. I asked him, I texted Baruch Sturman, and he just responded today, and I wanted to know, does that mean you feel like the evolutionary process continues, and then it reached a stage where man is able to understand the idea of monotheism, And then Hashem speaks to that man? Or did something, like, did God interact specifically 6,000 years ago and infused the neshama? You know, I wasn't sure, can the neshama, which is a spiritual, I asked him, a spiritual entity, can that be evolved through a biologic evolutionary process? Again, he was looking at directed evolution, and he says, if I see directed evolution and all the stages, and it's just a tool used by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, does it make a difference if the nishmas apo, the breathing in, I get we were saying, of the nishmas chayim into man, started 14 billion years ago and just developed now, but it's still coming from God? Or did God do it, 6,000 years ago? Either way, that's the, there's nothing... doesn't shake our emunah to say that man or something within the neshama, something with was capable of understanding monotheism, started 6,000 years ago, but for a couple thousand years before that there were these other humanoids around that were in the shape and share, of a man, 99.9 probably physically completely, but there was, even though something slight difference is qualitatively a world of difference. And again, I was the one that said, no one said it, but I was the one that put the Nachash possibly, again, trying to understand these Midrashim that the Nachash had relations with Chava, but if a Nachash was a Homo sapien, but a Homo sapien without a Neshama, the head of the animal kingdom, it can make it a little bit, there were these brutes. There were brutes around in human form, but didn't have the Neshama, and that's the Bnei Elokim. And then, which again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ended that whole line of Kayin, at the Mabul, and then it was only, except Naama, which is Noach's wife, would be the only continuation from that line, but maybe that ended at the Mabul. Idea. Thank you.